Chapter 15.
She smiled at me.
Silke joyfully recounts her visit with her namesake to the women in the hut. She gurgled, looked me in the eyes, and smiled. It tore my heart apart.
Is she putting on weight? Is she healthy? Elena wants to know.
Yes, and yes, I think she has become a favourite with the nursery staff, but I'll need to make sure they're not feeding her another baby's lunch. Silke looks around at the women's thin faces, chapped lips, dark circles under their eyes, their clavicles protruding. She is glad she can give them some reprieve, something warm to think about and hold inside them during the hard, long days out in the snow.
You'd know all about that, Silke. Taking someone's lunch, Hannah says.
Silke's stomach flips.
Shut up, Hannah, Elena says. Who has given you more of their own lunch than anybody else here?
Well, she can afford to. Well, so can you now your husband has got you a job in the mess.
I will eat all of my lunch because I fought in a resistance against these bastards, and the Nazis too, unlike some people here.
She looks pointedly at Silke.
Keep your fucking voice down, Hannah, Elena says, attacking the only Jewish woman in here. One would think you were just like the Germans you fought against.
Hannah looks indignant. Silke's heart is racing. The blankness is coming over her.
She?
Hannah points at Silke. She goes to say more, then lets a smile come across her face.
I could tell you about all the things she has done to preserve her own flimsy little life.
No life is flimsy, Elena says. Silke feels sick.
Do you know how Josie is doing?
Olga asks, cutting across the tension, her fingers darting in and out, weaving her spell, embroidering another gown. Silke finds her voice.
I haven't seen her for a while now, not since they made her go back to work, when Natya was 4 weeks old. I'm told she's doing well. She is working in the administration building and she is feeding the baby herself.
Plenty of milk, apparently.
That's probably why little Natya is getting fat.
I never said she is getting fat. Just chubby. Silke tries to smile.
Please give her our love, however you can. Maybe one of the nursery staff will pass it on.
Olga says.
I will,
Silke reassures them. She knows how much you all care. She looks pointedly at Hannah.
But I will ask the staff to pass it on anyway. What's going to happen when...
Elena whispers.
Don't think about that,
Silke says. 2 years is a long way ahead. The truth is, Silke finds it incredibly hard to contemplate the separation. She knows too much about the pain of mother and daughter being forced apart. She knows too much about whole families being broken up, dehumanized, murdered. She cannot let herself think what might happen to Josie and Natya, or what might happen to Josie if Natya is taken away from her.
Do you think there is some way we can see her and the baby? I mean, just for a minute, Olga asks.
Maybe in summer, Elena suggests.
That's an idea, when it's warmer and we can be outside on a Sunday. I love that idea, something to look forward to,
Olga says. Hannah huffs.
There's no getting through to you all.
Smiles return to the other women's faces at the possibility of seeing the baby. The faraway look Silke sees in their eyes tells her they are dreaming of, visualising, holding an infant. Silke knows several of them have children waiting for them, including Olga. It's not something she is often able to talk about, but when she receives her limited letters, she sometimes passes them around to share what her two boys, who are living with an aunt, are getting up to. She is often silent for days afterwards, with emotions playing across her face, no doubt picturing every little detail her sister has included in the letter. Before the moon and stars disappear and the white knights return, the camp is struck down with typhoid. The accommodation hut nearest the hospital is emptied of its residents to create a new ward, the infectious ward. In the washroom cleaning up after a birth, Silke is joined by Petra. She hasn't seen him in this room before and immediately braces herself for news she suspects she doesn't want to hear. He leans against the door, looking at her.
Just say it, she says abruptly.
We...
Who's we?
She interrupts. Sorry, some of the other doctors you've worked with, here and on the general ward.
Go on.
We know you have spent time in another prison, another camp, and that maybe there you were exposed to typhoid.
His eyes are focused on the ground. Do you want me to confirm or deny that?
She says, both terrified and exhausted.
Have you? Been exposed to typhoid?
Yes. Auschwitz-Birkenau, winter 1943. Ever since her mother died, Silke has been spending less time in the main compound, too afraid of seeing the women who are starting to turn, the ones who will soon be sent to their deaths, the ones who will soon be coming to her, the one she will have to force herself to feel nothing for. But her mother had told her to look after Magda, and she wants to. But her strong, kind sister is just as vulnerable as the rest. There is also the fact that the other women, besides her friends, have begun to give Silke a wide berth. Those that dare spit on the ground when she walks past call her the worst names they know. Death clings to her, and so do the SS. One Sunday afternoon, she has forced herself out to check on Magda. Silke and Gita are sitting beside Gita and Magda's block, away from the door. She can't bring herself to go in yet, as Gita has told her that Magda has been lying down all day, that she is worried. Silke watches as Gita sifts through the new grass, searching for the elusive four-leaf clover. They are currency here. With a clover, she can buy extra food or prevent a beating. Gita is talking quietly about her latest stolen moment with Lale. He had walked beside her as she left the administration building, slowly going back to her block. They hadn't spoken, just exchanged stolen glances, which said 1,000 words. The quiet is broken by hysterical screaming. It starts inside the block and intensifies as a girl runs outside. Silke and Gita look up. They both recognise the girl and jump to their feet, running towards her. She is heading to the edge of the women's camp and into danger.
Dana! Dana!
They both scream. Catching up to her, they grab an arm each as Dana collapses, sobbing.
No, Silke, no!
Silke's heart sinks.
What? Dana, what is it?
What's happened? Gita says.
Dana slowly lifts her red-rimmed eyes to Silke. They are full of regret.
She was so weak. It was typhoid. She hid it so you didn't have to. And then it happened so fast.
No, Dana, please. Not Magda. Silke clutches at Dana's arm.
Please, please. Not my sister too.
Dana nods slowly.
I'm sorry, Silke.
Silke feels an intense pain course through her body and up into her head. She leans over and retches, feels arms around her, under her arms, helping her up. Gita is crying softly next to her.
Silke, Dana says, her voice choked with tears. She told me just this morning how much she loves you, how brave you are, how she knows you're going to get out of here.
Silke lets Dana and Gita hold her, the way she held them when they lost their families. This is what they share. Unfathomable losses.
I have to see her,
Silke says. Her friends go into the block with her and help her to sit in the bunk across from Magda's body. Silke wants to cry and scream, but it comes out more like a yell, a fury. And then, as soon as it has come out of her, it goes back inside. Her crying stops. She stares, shaking, but feeling blank. She stays like that for a long time, and her friends stay with her. Then she stands and closes her sister's eyes, clutches both her friends' hands in turn, and leaves the block. Did you get the disease? Have you had symptoms? No and no, Silke says, her mind numb. That means you probably have an immunity to it, meaning you can get exposed and not suffer the symptoms or become sick. Do you understand?
Yes, I understand. Why do you need to know?
He shifts on his feet.
We need nurses to work on the infectious ward, which is now overflowing with typhoid cases. We need nurses like you who can work there and not get infected.
Is that all? She says, with a strange mix of fear and relief. He looks surprised. What did you think we would be doing to you?
I don't know. Injecting me with the disease to see how I fared?
Petra cannot keep the shock from his face. He looks away, speechless.
I'll go, she says hastily. I'll work on the ward. There are many days here I'm not really needed. If you need someone in my place, please. There are many capable women in my hut.
He nods, but he is not really listening.
I think Yelena Georgievna was right about where you have come from.
I come from Czechoslovakia.
He sighs, knowing it is not the full answer.
To think we would experiment on you, or on anybody for that matter, in the manner you just said.
It doesn't matter, Silke says, panicking. I didn't mean to say that. When do you want me to start?
Tomorrow is fine. I'll let them know you're coming.
Silke finishes cleaning up before dashing to the nursery next door. Natya is rolling around on the floor, attempting to snatch at a nearby rag doll. Her little face lights up as she hears Silke call out her name. Silke sweeps her into the air, and hugging her tightly, she paces the room, whispering words of love and promises to return as soon as she can. She hopes by saying these words, they will come true. A white surgical gown, face mask, and thick rubber gloves are handed to Silke as she enters the infectious ward. As she is tied into the gown at the back, she looks around the ward, trying to process the scene. Every bed has at least one patient, some two. Others lie on the floor with no mattress, covered only by a dirty sheet or blanket. She tries to steady her breathing. The nurse helping her into the gown introduces herself as Sonia Donatova.
It looks as if we're going to be busy here, Silke says. Please tell me what you want me to do.
Very happy to have you, Silke. Come with me, we're doing rounds. I'll introduce you to the others later.
Can we not get more beds in here? No patient should have to lie on the floor.
We move the ones who are not going to make it onto the floor. It's easier to clean the floor than a mattress. You'll get the hang of it.
Something turns in Silke's gut. Bodies on the floor, on the ground, with no hope of living another day. So, she's back here again. Her curse.
Silke watches as two nurses gently lift a patient from a bed and place him on the floor nearby. She overhears one of them say, "He's on hourly time of death recording." Once a blanket has been tucked under his frail, shivering body, a note is made in his file and placed by his feet. Silke sighs, feeling the familiar sensation of her body beginning to leave her, icing over. She follows Sonia to a bed where a delirious, screaming woman thrashes about. Sonia dips a small towel in a nearby basin of water and attempts to place it on the woman's face. She is smacked in the hand and upper body by the flailing limbs.
Help me cool her down. Take one of her hands and hold tight.
Silke grabs one of the woman's arms, forcing it down by her body. Sonia holds the other arm and with her free hand attempts to place the wet towel on her face and head, only partly succeeding.
She only came in yesterday. She is young and has got to the delirious stage really quickly. If we can cool her down and break the fever, she has a chance of surviving.
Couldn't we just bring some snow or ice in and apply it to her skin? We could. That's one way of cooling someone down quickly, but it could be too quick and would shock her system. No, I'm afraid we have to do it fast, but not that dramatically.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No, you made a good suggestion, it's just not the right one. No one expects you to know what to do the minute you walk in, unless, of course, you've worked here before.
She has not, but she has seen the final stages of typhoid enough times. And the aftermath.
I came here from maternity. Does that answer your question?
Sonia laughs.
You are definitely not expected to know anything about treating typhoid, just as I would pretend I wasn't a nurse if someone came to me in labour. That's scary. Two people to worry about.
The cool towel is having an effect. The patient is becoming subdued, and the manic movements associated with fever subside.
Was Magda like this in her final hours?
She wonders now if Geeta had been distracting her with the four-leaf clovers, sparing her these horrific images.
I think you will be all right with her on your own. Just keep wetting the towel and running it over her face and head, her arms and legs. You're washing the sweat off and this will help cool her. I'm going to check on another one. Call out if you want help.
As Sonia leaves, Silke rinses the towel in the basin, noting that the water is in fact very cold. Small bits of ice visible. She takes over washing the woman, talking to her in a soothing voice.
This voice seems to be something that Silke uses naturally, no matter what she is feeling, or not feeling, when she's looking after a patient. It's a low voice, a murmur, that tells a story beyond the moment of pain. Perhaps she does it just as much for herself. After a short while, the woman's body changes from being drenched in sweat to being covered in goosebumps. Her shivering changes, reflecting she is now cold as she attempts to curl up in a ball. Instinctively, Silke reaches for the blanket on the floor and wraps her up tightly. She looks around for Sonia.
Sonia Donatova, she's now shivering with the cold. I've wrapped her in a blanket. What should I do next?
Leave her and find another patient who needs cooling down.
Where do I find more towels?
Is there a problem with the one you've got?
No, it's just that, I used it on her.
We don't have the luxury of new towels for every patient, Silke, Sonia says with an apologetic look. Take the towel you have to the next patient and the basin of water. If you need more water, get it from the sink at the end of the room.
As her day ends, Silke has seen 6 patients die and 14 new patients brought in. On 2 occasions, heavily gowned and masked doctors have come into the ward, walked around and spoken to the nurses in charge. It is clear to Silke this ward is managed by nurses only. The doctors do not get involved with medical care. They visit to get the statistics on how many enter and how many leave, either alive or to the mortuary. Silke arrives back at her hut every night, exhausted. Her days are spent cooling down and warming up feverish patients, moving men and women from a bed onto the floor when it is deemed they will not survive, helping to carry the deceased patients outside where they are left to be collected by others, unseen. She carries the bruises unintentionally caused by delirious patients she is trying to care for. She learns all there is to know about the disease, such as how to recognise the different stages and when to diagnose the more severe internal bleeding and respiratory distress that will likely lead to death. No one can explain to her why some patients get a nasty red rash over their bodies, while others don't, or why this symptom is not necessarily an indicator of a poor outcome. With the first flush of spring flowers and the melting of some of the snow, the numbers of new patients presenting on the ward each day begins to decline. Silke and the other nurses begin to enjoy caring for only a few patients each, giving them the attention they would have liked to have shown to all who went before. One day, Yelena appears on the ward. Silke is overjoyed to see the familiar face of the doctor.
How are you? Yelena asks warmly, wisps of blonde hair escaping from her braids and framing her face like a halo.
Tired, very tired, and very happy to see you.
You and the other nurses have done an amazing job. You have saved many lives and you've given comfort to others in their final moments.
Silke tries to take this in. She still feels as if she should be rushing about, doing more.
We did what we could. More medicine would have been helpful.
Yes, I know. There is never enough medicine here.
We have to make hard decisions over and over about who gets them.
Who doesn't?
I understand,
Silke says, that rush of guilt coming again for the medicine she has stolen.
So, my girl, the question is, what do you want to do now?
You mean I have a choice?
Yes, you do.
Petra will take you back on the maternity ward tomorrow.
However, your friend Olga is also enjoying the work.
Silke understands that what Yelena is saying is that going back may displace Olga from her now much better position in the camp.
And I was wondering if you would like to come back and work on the general ward with me.
But
Gleb Vitalievich is gone.
He was transferred a few weeks ago. The administrators finally looked at his mortality figures and decided, in the interests of productivity, it would be best that he move on. She smiles.
Where to?
Silke asks.
I don't know and I don't care. I'm just glad he's no longer here. So that means you can come back to my ward.
If you want to, that is.
I do enjoy working with Petra Davidovich and helping the babies into the world.
Yelena nods her head, thinking she has her answer.
However, I would like to come back and work with you and the other doctors, where I can make more of a difference, if that's all right.
Yelena wraps her arms around her. Silke responds stiffly, moving one hand to Yelena's back, then pulls away.
Of course it's all right, Yelena says. It's what I want. You do make a difference.
Petra Davidovich is going to be very angry with me for stealing you away, though.
He's a good doctor. Will you tell him how much I appreciate what he's done for me, what he has taught me?
I will.
Now go back to your hut, and I don't want to see you for 2 days, she says, taking a pen and paper from her pocket to write a note. Get some rest. What you've done here over the past few months, you must be exhausted.
I am. Thank you.
Silke looks out at the daylight, thinking of the coming short summer.
Yelena Georgievna?
Yes?
You know Josie had a little girl.
Yes, I heard, and I hear both mother and baby are doing well.
I'd love to see little Natya. Is it safe for me to visit her, given where I've been working?
I wouldn't go near her for another 2 weeks. That is the incubation period of typhoid. Maybe even 3 weeks to be safe.
I can wait another 3 weeks, but not a day more.
Chapter 16.
It's like you never left. Welcome back,
Raisa greets Silke on her return to the general ward.
About time you showed up, Lyuba calls out from the other end of the ward. Get your coat off and help us out.
Have you two not done anything to clean this place up since I left? I swear that dirty towel was lying there more than a year ago.
Silke throws back at them.
Has it been that long? Raisa says.
Long enough, Silke says. Screams from the patient Lyuba is caring for divert their attention.
Is everything all right? Silke asks.
Come on, we've got plenty for you to do, Raisa says. There was an explosion in one of the mine tunnels yesterday. Quite a few men died, and we have several who are badly injured. Some have been in surgery, and we have two who had to have limbs amputated.
Just tell me where you want me.
Go and help Lyuba. That poor chap was badly burned and she's trying to change his dressings. We've given him something for the pain, but it's barely touching him.
Silke joins Lyuba, forcing a smile for the man lying in the bed, his arms and upper body wrapped in bandages, his face red raw from flash burns, his sobbing producing no tears.
Tell me what to do, she asks Lyuba.
Silke, this is Jakob. We need to change the bandages on your arms, don't we, Jakob? We don't want you to get an infection.
Hello, Jakob. That's a Polish name, isn't it?
Jakob nods, despite the pain moving obviously causes him.
Lyuba, is it all right if I speak to Jakob in Polish?
She nods.
Perhaps you can change the bandage on his other arm while you two are remembering old times.
I'm from Czechoslovakia, your next-door neighbour, but I am
familiar with Poland. I was about to ask you what you're doing here, but let's leave that conversation for another time. Silke gently unwinds the bandage covering Jakub's left arm, chatting like a long-lost friend. With the bandage removed, she sees the damage. Liuba hands her a new bandage, soaked in a solution that makes it feel slimy. Silke asks Liuba, how is his arm burnt worse than his hand? It doesn't make sense. Jakub's clothes caught fire and the burns he received through his clothing are more severe because they kept burning for longer, until the clothes could be removed. I see. Well, Jakub, can I give you some advice? Go to work naked in future. Silke realizes her comment is in extremely bad taste and starts to apologize. But she feels Jakub squeeze her hand and looks down at him. He is trying to smile, to laugh. He has appreciated her joke. Liuba regards them both. You have to excuse her, Jakub. Silke has been away from us, delivering babies. She's used to her patients being naked. In fact, if it wasn't so cold, I'm sure she would walk around here naked. Liuba, Silke exclaims indignantly. Liuba laughs heartily. I'll finish with your dressing, Jakub, so I'll leave you two. Call if you want anything, Silke. You've been a great help, Liuba. I think Jakub and I can manage from here, can't we, Jakub? Silke quickly finishes rebandaging Jakob's other arm, telling him she'll be back to check on him in a little while. She joins Raisa and falls quickly back into the rhythm of caring for the patients Raisa allocates her. This feels natural, she thinks. And she knows what the complete opposite is like, when a role you are forced into feels unnatural, like your very soul has been contorted. During a break, Raisa, Liuba, and Silke sip on hot, weak tea, eat bread and something pretending to be sausage. Yelena joins them, waving away the offer of tea. It's well known the doctors have the premium tea in their lounge area. How's our girl doing? She asks Raisa and Liuba. It's like she never left. Thanks for talking her into coming back to us, Raisa says. She didn't talk me into anything, Silke says. It is good to be back and helping out, even if I have to hear you telling patients I should be walking around naked. Who said that about you?
It was just a joke, Silke quickly says. We were distracting a patient with nasty burns while we changed his bandages.
So long as it's effective, Yelena smiles. Is there anything more I can do to help? Silke asks. Actually, Silke, I was wondering if you would like to assist me in surgery tomorrow. It's the one area you haven't worked in. I'm doing some relatively straightforward procedures and thought it could be an extension of your training.
That's a great idea, Liuba says. I think she's ready for it. What do you say, Silke?
I don't know what to say. Thank you. What do I have to do? Just come to work tomorrow as usual. I'll meet you and we'll take it from there. Silke watches Yelena walk away. She is in awe of her ability as a brilliant doctor and of her willingness to share her knowledge, particularly with someone who has had no formal training.
It's amazing that she volunteered to be here, she says to the others.
Yes, most of the doctors have been sent here, usually because they've screwed up at whatever hospital they came from or got on the wrong side of someone in their hometown. Or, like us, it's their first assignment out of medical school. Yelena Georgievna genuinely wants to work where she can do the most good, Raisa says.
I felt rude to ask, but does she have a family with her?
No, she lives with the other female doctors in their quarters, though I did hear a rumour about her being friendly with one of the other doctors. They've been seen together in the town at night, Liuba whispers.
The town of Vorkuta, outside the camp, has been built entirely by prisoners.
Really?
Love again, Silke thinks, even in a place like this. Do we know who?
Which doctor?
The doctor in the maternity ward is all I know.
Petre. She and Petre Davidovich.
You know him, Raisa says. Of course she does, Liuba adds. That's where she was working. Did you see them together?
No. Well, only the once when she took me to meet him on my first day. But that explains why he was prepared to take me on when I got fired from here.
That's wonderful, Silke marvels. Because he is just like her, a really good doctor and a kind man. Is he good looking? Liuba raises her eyebrows. Silka thinks for a moment. He is handsome, with a thick moustache and eyes that smile.
Yes,
they are perfect for each other. She can't help thinking, though, that he is not the most handsome man she has seen in her time at Vorkuta. Now she's back in the hospital, she wonders if she will see the messenger, Alexander, again.
I think we'd better get back to work, Raisa says. I can feel the temperature rising around you two.
Yes, work is what Silka needs to do. She will not allow herself to wander far too long about the impossible. The prospect of being in the operating room sends Silka's brain working overtime. That night she cannot sleep. Thoughts whirl around inside her head as she replays all she has seen and done that day. The next morning the sky is overcast, but Silka appreciates walking across the grass with small weedy flowers underfoot on the way to the hospital. Yelena is waiting for her and together they go through to the area designated for surgery. An assistant is standing by with a gown, gloves, and a mask. Silka reaches out to take the gown.
You have to wash your hands thoroughly first, Yelena says, leading her over to a nearby sink.
Are you wearing anything under your shirt?
Just my slip. Good, take your shirt off. You can't have a sleeve getting in the way.
Silka hesitates.
It's all right, Silka. There's only us women here.
Slowly, Silka unbuttons her shirt. The assistant takes it from her, handing her a bar of soap and turning a tap on for her. Silka starts rubbing the soap up her arms. The assistant goes to arrange the room. Yelena stands beside her, lathering up and scrubbing her own hands and arms, past the elbows. Silka copies her actions. Focused back on the running water, rinsing the soap from her arms and hands, Silka is startled when Yelena gently takes hold of her left arm. She turns it towards her, staring at the blurry blue-green numbers running down the inside of her forearm. Yelena goes to say something, closes her mouth. Silka continues to stare at the running water, breathing deeply. Raising her head, she looks directly at Yelena.
Do you know where I got this?
Yes. I had suspected you had been there, but I didn't really want to believe it.
Silka feels hot and cold at the same time.
You must have been so young, Yelena says.
She lets go of Silka's arm.
16. Can I ask, your family?
Silka shakes her head, looking away, reaching to turn off the tap. She wants this conversation to be over.
Oh, Silka, Yelena says.
Silka looks at the doctor's compassionate face.
Of course, she thinks. Everyone would know by now what that other place was, but not her role in it.
Doctor, just tell me one thing, Silka says firmly.
She can't look at Yelena.
Yes?
Did they get them?
Yelena pauses, then understands.
Yes, Silka. The commandants, the guards, the doctors, there have been trials. Their crimes are being exposed to the world. They are being imprisoned or executed for what they did.
Silka nods. Her jaw is clenched. She could scream or cry. There is too much welling up inside her. It's still not enough. It took too long.
I don't know what to say, Silka, except that I'm so sorry you had to go through that. Something unimaginable, and then also to end up here. Whatever the reason for that.
Yelena falters.
Well, you were only 16.
Silka nods. Her eyes are hot with unshed tears. She swallows and swallows. She clears her throat, takes a deep breath, wills her racing heart to slow, looks back at Yelena.
The patient is waiting for us, she says.
Yes,
Yelena says. As they dry off their hands and start to walk towards the operating room, where the assistant waits with their gloves and gowns, Yelena says,
Silka, if you ever want someone to talk to.
Thank you.
Silke cuts her off. She can't imagine a time when she could ever put those memories, those images, into words. She clears her throat again.
I am grateful, Yelena Georgievna.
Yelena nods. Just know I am here. As they near the operating room, the conversation recedes in Silke's mind. She has an important task to do, and it will distract her. Once her gown and gloves are on, the assistant pulls Silke's mask down under her chin and then holds open the door, leading into a small room. A patient lies on a table, and an anaesthetist sits at the end of the bed, holding a rubber mask over the patient's nose and mouth.
He's out, he comments, with little interest or enthusiasm, before staring off at a point on the far wall.
Silke follows Yelena and stands beside her.
Go round to the other side, you can see and help me better from there.
Silke does as instructed, holding her hands out in front of her, afraid to touch anything.
All right, here we go. You see all the instruments on the table beside you? Well, I'm going to say the name of the instrument I want, then point to it so you know which one it is. You'll soon get the hang of it.
The assistant has followed them into the room and pulls the sheet covering the man away, revealing his naked body.
I need to get into his stomach and remove whatever it is he has swallowed that he shouldn't have.
Unfortunately, some people will go to extreme lengths to not work outside, including swallowing objects that could kill them.
You're joking, Silke says.
No, I'm not. Coming to hospital and having their stomach cut open is seen as a better option than working, at least for a while.
How do you know for sure he has swallowed something?
The pain he was in when he was brought to us was real. When we couldn't work out what was wrong, he finally admitted to having swallowed something.
Did he say what?
That's the funny thing. He wouldn't say. Told us to go hunting for it and then we'd know.
Yelena gives a wry smile.
It is a different world here, Silke thinks. Still very much a prison, as such desperate actions indicated. But in that other place, you would not want to draw any attention to yourself. In a selection, you would not want to attract the eye of the doctors. You would not want anything to do with them at all.
Silke, I need you to hand me a scalpel. Yelena points it out on the tray.
Silke picks it up and places it in her outstretched hand.
Slap it in my hand so I feel it. These gloves are so thick, I won't know if I'm holding it unless you hit me with it. Just make sure the blade is pointed at you and I get the handle.
Silke watches in fascination as Yelena quickly and expertly slices the patient's abdomen open, blood gently oozing from the cut.
Grab some swabs, those pads that look like thick squares of bandage, and wipe the blood away. It will stop soon.
Silke catches on quickly, wiping the blood away so Yelena can see what she is doing. Instruments are handed over, explanations given by Yelena, questions asked by Silke, until Yelena raises her hand from the man's abdomen, holding up a metal spoon.
I wonder if the owner misses this, she says with humour. Let's see if it caused any damage in his stomach.
She pokes around. Silke leans over for a closer inspection, and the two women bang heads.
I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have...
It's all right. I'm glad you want to have a closer look. This is how you all learn. Yelena is silent for a moment, considering the open cavity.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any damage, so now we sew him back up.
When the patient has been wheeled from the room, Silke follows Yelena back into the washroom. The assistant is waiting for them. She unties their gowns, removes their masks and gloves, and hands Silke back her shirt. Silke wonders if she is a prisoner too.
As usual, you learned quickly in there. I'd be happy to have you assist me any time. In fact, I think we should do more of it, so you become totally comfortable with what you are doing. What do you say?
Silke is wary for a moment. She hopes that Yelena is not just doing this because of what she knows, because she pities her. But this is rewarding, challenging work, and Silke does think she can do it.
Yes, please. Go back and tell Raisa and Luba the news. I'm sure they could do with an extra pair of hands for the afternoon.
Thank you, Silke says.
She feels herself welling up again. There's no blankness coming to take over, to cover it, and so she hurries from the room.
She stops a moment in the hall to gather herself, then walks onto the ward. A chorus of, "Well, how did you get on?" greets her.
"Well, very well."
She looks at their open faces, wonders suddenly if they know, too.
"What do you want me to do here?" she asks quickly. "I've still got half a day of work."
"Can you check the charts and get any medicines that need to be handed out?" Raissa says. Silke dives into her work, relieved to push all thoughts away.
Chapter 17. Silke has written down the names of 5 patients and the drugs they require. She strolls to the dispensary. As she approaches, she hears voices inside, one of them raised. Cautiously, she opens the door. Yuri Petrovich, the kind male doctor Silke remembers from her previous time working in the hospital, stands in the middle of the room with a knife held to his throat. On the other end of the knife is a man who looks capable of wrestling a bear and winning the fight. The big man turns to face Silke.
"What the fuck do you want?"
he yells at her. She can't speak.
"Get in here and close the door."
Silke does as she's told, leaning her back against the shut door, staying as far away from the man as possible.
"Get over here and stand beside the doctor. Do it now, or I cut him."
In 3 steps, Silke is beside the doctor, who looks at her, eyes pleading.
"What do you want?"
she asks, with a bravado she doesn't feel.
"You to shut your mouth. You picked the wrong time to come in here. Now I'll have to deal with you too."
Silke glares at him. She knows enough about violent men to be able to judge the desperation in this one. His threats are a means to an end.
"What do you want?" "I said, shut your mouth. I'll do the talking."
"Just do as he says," the doctor whimpers.
"That's good advice," the big man says. "We can all leave here happy if you listen to the good doctor and do as I say."
As he pushes the knife under the doctor's chin, a trickle of blood flows and the man smiles a toothless grin.
"Now give me the fucking drugs, the ones I got last time."
Silke is incredulous. She stares from the man to the doctor.
All right, but you need to put the knife down," Yuri Petrovich says.
The man looks from the doctor to Silke. In a flash, the knife is now at Silke's throat.
"In case you thought of making a run for it," he chuckles.
The doctor takes several pill containers from the shelves. With the hand that is not across Silke's neck, the man holds open a large pocket sewn in his coat, and the doctor stuffs them in there.
"Keep them coming. I've got another pocket on this side."
The doctor places more drugs in the other pocket.
"That's all. If I gave you any more, there wouldn't be enough for the patients."
"I don't care about the patients. When's the next delivery coming in?"
"I don't know."
"Wrong answer!"
The man presses the knife against Silke's throat. She gasps.
"Don't hurt her! In 2 weeks, not for another 2 weeks."
"Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks then."
He lets Silke go, keeping the knife raised. He looks her up and down.
"And maybe I'll see you too. You're not bad."
"You should get out of here before someone comes looking for me," Silke says bravely.
"Yeah, you're right."
The big man points the knife at the doctor.
"He knows the drill. Don't leave here until you know I will have cleared the building."
Silke and the doctor watch as the big man calmly walks to the door, tucking his knife inside his coat, opens it, pulls it shut quietly behind him. Silke turns on the doctor.
"Who is he? We need to get the guards. Get someone and stop him."
She wants to say, "How could you just hand over medicine to him?" But how can she ask such a thing when she has taken some here and there to protect herself?
"Slow down, Silke." Silke waits while he takes a moment, appearing to calm himself before he speaks further.
"He is one of the criminal trustees. He's a powerful person in the camp, with a lot of very strong friends. They cornered me a few months back when I was leaving one night and threatened to kill me if I didn't give them regular supplies of medicine."
This may be where Hannah is getting them from now, through the network.
Why didn't you...
Tell someone.
Who? Who do you think is running this place? It's not the guards, Silka. They're outnumbered. You should know that. It's the trustees. And as long as the work is done here, the fighting and killing kept to a minimum, no one is going to challenge them.
Silka feels foolish to have been here so long and not have realised the extent of the trustees' involvement in running the camp. But she supposes stumbling across such knowledge is partly luck in a place like this. Depends on where you are and what you can overhear. Find out. It is better not to be so close to power, to not know too much. She is still incredulous about what this means for the patients, that quantity going missing.
I don't believe that they can just walk in here and demand you hand over whatever they want.
Afraid so, he sighs, leaning against a bench as the colour slowly returns to his face. They did it to my predecessor, and I'm just the next person for them to threaten and intimidate, and they will kill me. I have no doubt about that.
Then I'll...
No, you won't. You won't say anything, you hear me? Not a word, or it will be the last thing you say. They know I won't say anything, and if something happens to that bastard who was just in here, they know it will have been you that talked, and they'll be waiting for you.
Silka won't say anything, for now, but she does need to think about this.
Promise me you won't say anything.
There you are. Raisa appears in the doorway. I was wondering what was taking you so long. She looks at the pale-faced doctor. Am I interrupting something?
No, no.
Silka and the doctor chorus together.
I'm sorry, Raisa, I shouldn't have kept Silka from her work. She was just helping me out.
You need to get some of the medication to the patients right away, Silka. They're asking for it.
Silka looks at the scrunched-up piece of paper in her hand. She had forgotten she was holding it. Straightening it out, she tries to read what she needs. She quickly locates the medications and hurries from the room, leaving Raisa looking at the doctor in disbelief.
As Silka is handing medication to a patient, Raisa steps up beside her, whispering,
Are you all right? Was he trying something on with you?
What?
No, nothing like that. I'm fine.
All right, but you will tell me if there's something I should know.
Don't worry, I will.
As Raisa walks away, Silka calls out,
Raisa, did you see a large, ugly man leaving the ward about 5 minutes ago?
I see nothing but large, ugly men leaving here all day, every day. Was it someone in particular?
No, not really.
Thanks for your concern. At the end of her shift, Silka steps outside and looks to the sky. Clear, blue, the sun shining brightly. The white knights have returned.
You!
Is spoken gruffly behind her. Silka turns round. 6 or 7 large men stand behind her. They take 1 step closer, in unison.
Have a safe evening, one of them says.
I will. She defiantly throws back at them.
See you tomorrow. Same time, he says.
From behind the pack, the large, ugly brute who held a knife to her throat only a few hours earlier steps forward. Out of his pocket, he pulls the knife and tosses it from one hand to another. Silka walks away slowly, not looking back.
Chapter 18.
You promised, Silka, please make it happen. Elena pleads one Sunday evening as they stroll around the camp, snatching this opportunity to enjoy the dazzling overhead display of sunlight poking through clouds.
I know, Silka says. She wants to see Josie so badly, but she hasn't figured out what to do about the eyes of the trustees on her, whether they might threaten anyone they see her close to. She has determined by now, though, that they only appear as she finishes work. She has never seen them after she returns to Hut 29.
I'll go to the nursery tomorrow and get a message to Josie that it's time you met Natya.
Although Olga has been working in the maternity ward, she hasn't yet crossed paths with Josie, only seen little Natya when delivering a mother and baby over to the nursery. Josie must finish later than her in the administration building.
I'm sorry to keep pestering you, Elena says. You've seemed worried about something for several weeks and, well, me and the others are concerned about you. And perhaps seeing Josie and Natia will help you.
Silke has been going straight to bed after nightly duties, not speaking much to the others, not wanting to endanger anyone. It isn't just the trustees who are worrying her, though. It is also the thought that some of them might already know, as the doctors did, what went on in that other place. And they know that she is Jewish and that she never speaks about her arrest. The worry has brought images back to the surface, made her blank and unresponsive.
You've been talking about me.
We talk about all of us, behind our backs, of course, Elena smiles.
Something has been bothering you. You don't have to tell us if you don't want to, but we might be able to help. You never know.
That's very nice of you, Elena, but everything is fine. She tries to keep the sharpness out of her voice.
I promise I will get a message to Josie tomorrow. I want to see them both too.
Several of the other women from Hut 29 join them, and Elena excitedly tells them Josie and Natia will be visiting next Sunday. Silke must correct them. She will get the message to Josie, but she doesn't know when they will see her. Clearly, Josie hasn't been wandering around on the White Night Sundays, whether by choice, for comfort or safety of herself and her child from Vadim, from strangers, or because she's under a specific set of rules. Silke is not sure. But hearing that a visit to Josie and Natia is a possibility is enough for the women, for now. Anastasia walks up beside Silke.
Tell me more about Josie. Why is she so special?
The sun pokes in and out of the clouds, throwing shadows across Anastasia's young features.
No one has said she was special. Look at them. Look how happy they are just hearing her name.
Silke considers. We went through a lot together when we first came here. Josie was the youngest of us, and I guess we all sort of mothered her. Then she got pregnant. That was hard on her, and we all helped her get through her pregnancy, that's all. You can understand them now wanting to see her again with her baby. For them, part of that baby belongs to us. They have made clothes for her, and some of them have left their own babies behind, so they are desperate to hold little Natia.
I see, she nods. I look forward to meeting her.
They walk on in silence for a while.
The man who visits your bed some nights, Anastasia says. Do you love him?
Silke is stunned by the question.
What?
Do you love him?
Why would you ask such a question? Do you love the men who abuse you?
That's different.
In what way?
I hear your guy talking to you. He's in love with you. I just wondered if you loved him back. I don't hear you saying the same things to him.
Silke pulls Anastasia close.
You will not ask me that again, she says firmly. My business is not your business. You're young and still have a lot to learn about this place and your place here. Do you understand?
Anastasia looks shocked.
You don't have to get angry with me. I just asked a question.
I'm not angry, Silke says,
though she knows she is acting as she has in the past, some indignation rising up, cracking through the blank surface. I need you to know your boundaries where I'm concerned. I'll do all I can to help you, but you need to stay out of my business.
I'm sorry, all right? Sorry I said anything, Anastasia moves away from her. I just thought if you loved him back, that would be really nice.
Anastasia's questions rattle Silke. She knows Boris feels differently about her than she does him. She has never considered their arrangement to be anything more than her providing him with comfort and her body. A transaction.
Love?
She is fond of the women in her hut, and Yelena, Raisa and Lyuba. She cares for them, would do anything for them. When she tries to connect these emotions to Boris, she definitely can't.
If he disappeared tomorrow, would she miss him?
No, she answers to herself. If he asked her to do something that could get her into trouble? Same answer. What he provides for her is safety from gang rape. She knows about being the property of powerful men and the protection it can provide, though she has also never had any choice in the matter. No, she cannot think of love.
Hey, you, nurse.
Silke looks to her right, to where the voice came, not sure if it is aimed at her.
Enjoying your walk?
Silke freezes. Her hand instinctively pushes Anastasia away, not wanting her to be part of any danger she now feels is imminent. The thug who held a knife to her throat is only a few feet away, surrounded by his shadows, all smirking, some leering at the two girls. The thug pulls his knife from his pocket, waving it at Silke.
I'm going back to the hut, she fires at Anastasia. Go and find the others and meet me back there.
But
go, Anastasia, don't ask questions.
Slowly, Anastasia walks away, towards the rest of the women. The hut is the jurisdiction of Boris and the trustees who protect their women, so Silke thinks they will be safe there.
What do you want?
She asks, hoping to keep their eyes on her so the other women can get away.
We just saw you and thought we'd say hello, he smirks.
Silke asks them more questions, hoping not to work them up, but trying to stall them. She notices Vadim in the distance, watching.
I am no threat to your operations, she says, and starts to walk away, the hairs rising on her neck when she turns her back to them. How easy it would be for the thug to lunge with a knife.
Collapsing on her bed back in the hut, Silke looks at the bed beside hers, where Anastasia sleeps, the girl who moments ago was placed in danger because of Silke. The girl who had asked Silke about love. Still a girl. Only 16, the age Silke was when she entered the other place, she realises. Was that why Silke had been so upset? Had she been that naive at Anastasia's age? Had she believed in possibilities like love? Yes, she had. Auschwitz-Birkenau, 1944. Silke watches as hundreds of naked women file past her. The snow is several inches thick on the ground and continuing to fall, whirling around in the wind. She pulls her coat collar over her mouth and nose, her hat all but covering her eyes. Women march past her to who knows where, their death the only certainty. She is transfixed and cannot move. It's as if she must bear witness to the horror. She might survive this hell on earth and be the one who has to tell whoever will listen. A handful of SS guards walk either side of the rows of women. Other prisoners hurry on, turning away. It is too much to fathom. Too much pain. As the last guard passes Silke, she sees the commandant from Auschwitz, Anton Tauber, walking behind him, his whip smacking against his thigh. He is Schwarzhuber's senior officer. She recognises him. He sees her. Before she can turn and run, he has grabbed her by the arm, forcing her to walk with him. She doesn't dare speak or attempt to break free. Tauber is the most hated and feared of all the senior officers, even more than Schwarzhuber. Already he has visited her in her room. Already he has let her know he too will come for her, whenever it suits. Out of the gates of Birkenau they march, into a nearby paddock, off to the side of the road that separates Auschwitz from Birkenau. The women are made to stand in a single line, pushed and shoved by guards until they stand shoulder to shoulder, shivering, freezing, weeping. Silke stands beside Tauber, looking at the ground in front of her. Walk with me, Tauber says to her. They stop in front of the first woman. With the tip of his whip, Tauber lifts her breast. When he releases the whip, it sags down onto her chest. To the guard walking in front of him, he indicates for the woman to be pushed back a step, out of line. Silke watches as the next two women, after their breasts also sag, join the first on a back row. The fourth woman stays in line, her breasts having bounced back into place. He is choosing whether they will live or die, depending on whether or not their breasts are firm.
Silke has seen enough. She stumbles along beside Tauber, not looking above ground level, refusing to notice whether the next woman has remained in line or taken a step back. Turning away, she projectile vomits, splattering the pristine white of the snow with her morning coffee and bread. Tauber laughs. Blindly, Silke allows herself to be grabbed by the arm by a guard and half-dragged back to her block.
You can take a break, Raisa tells Silke the next day. Put your feet up and have something to eat. There's plenty left over. Many are too sick to eat today.
Will it be all right if I go out for a short while? Just to the nursery. I want to see baby Natya and leave a message for Josie.
Raisa considers.
Don't be too long.
Silke has timed her visit deliberately to avoid the trustees. When she arrives, she stands near the door, watching Natya dragging herself along the floor, getting up onto all fours and attempting to crawl before collapsing as if a large hand has pushed her down. She waves to the staff, pointing to Natya. They nod their approval for her to visit. Sitting on the floor a few feet away, she encourages the baby to come to her. With a mighty effort, the little girl balances on her hands and knees and slowly moves first one hand, then the opposing leg. She squeals with delight at her accomplishment. Silke encourages her further. Another hand moves forward. She wobbles. A leg moves forward. One, two, three giant shuffles for a little girl who is then swept up into Silke's arms, hugged so tightly she squeals and wriggles to be released.
Well, there'll be no stopping her now. Look what you've done. Given us another one to chase after, says the nurse, whom Silke has learned is called Bella Amenova. Silke is not sure if Bella is seriously annoyed or making fun of her. She starts to apologise.
It was going to happen sooner or later. I'm just glad someone who knows her was here to see her crawl for the first time.
It was very special, wasn't it?
We won't tell Josie what she did today, and I guarantee when she drops this one off tomorrow, she'll tell us how she crawled for the first time last night.
That's a really nice thing to do, Silke says. I was wondering if you could pass on a message to Josie for me.
If I see her, yes, certainly.
Tell her her friends would love to see her and meet this little one, and if possible, can they come out this Sunday, after lights out?
Hardly matters that they turn the lights out this time of year, but I know what you mean. Where do you want to meet?
Silke doesn't want Josie to have to stray too far from comfort and safety. As a pack, with Silke hidden in the middle, the women from the hut should be all right.
We will wait between the maternity ward and the nursery.
Anastasia stands back as the women she shares living quarters with cry, hug, push to get their hands on both Josie and the small infant clinging to her. It is too much for Natya, who lets the world know she is scared of so much attention from strangers. Josie turns her back on the women and gently rocks Natya, soothing and comforting her.
One or two at a time might be best, she says, turning back to them with a smile. She doesn't know you, but I want her to. I want her to know the people responsible for her being here, being alive.
Elena pushes her way forward.
Me first. Can I have a hold?
Josie softly touches Elena on the face, making sure Natya is watching. Slowly, she hands her daughter over. Elena holds her at arm's length, not sure what to do with her. As she feels Natya relax, her little face never leaving her mother's, Elena brings the baby to her chest. They work out that as long as Natya can see her mother, she will happily be held and cuddled by them all. Silke stays at the back, enjoying the rare, sweet scene playing out in front of her. She cannot remember the last time they were all smiling, gap-toothed smiles, laughing and crying together.
She marvels at the power of something so small to make a difference. But in a place like this, any tiny moment that shifts them away from the relentless, gruelling horror, from the reminder of the long years still ahead, is to be treasured.
It's a shame, really, that Hannah has not joined them too, preferring to lie passed out on her bed. When Silke has determined that everyone has had a hold of Natya, except the reluctant Anastasia, she pushes her way forward. Natya sees her and immediately throws her arms at her, desperate to be with Silka. The others grumble and complain good-naturedly. Silka walks over to Anastasia. In Silka's arms, Natia doesn't complain that she can no longer see her mother. Silka introduces Natia to Anastasia. The little girl looks at Anastasia in puzzlement, as Anastasia makes no effort to touch her. Natia reaches out and tugs at strands of Anastasia's growing hair that have sprung free from her scarf. They both giggle. Anastasia refuses the offer to hold her. She is quite happy just to look at her. The others join them as Josie tells them they have now spoilt Natia and she probably won't sleep tonight. Reluctantly, Natia is given back to her mother and they say goodbye, promising to come back in 7 days' time. Same place. The women slowly drift back to their hut, chattering away about the evening, the embroiderers debating amongst themselves about the next size of gown they will need to make now they have met Natia. They all agree she is the most beautiful baby they have ever laid eyes on. Natia has been like a sun breaking through dark clouds. No one mentions the uncertain future that both Natia and Josie have, or the cruel surroundings Natia was born into. That's a conversation no one wants to start. They see Josie and Natia a second and third time. The third time, in a moment with Josie out of earshot of the others, Silka asks her if she has met a man called Alexander while working in the administration building. The Czech man, Josie asks. Yes, he works as a messenger, or did, last I knew, Silka says. Yes, I don't have a lot to do with him day to day, but I see him. He's very friendly, she says, which is a rare enough thing around here. It is, Silka says. I guess that's why he has stayed in my mind. Josie contemplates Silka. I can try to talk to him for you. Oh, no, Silka says. I was just wondering if he was still there. I haven't seen him for a while. Josie nods. Silka can see she wants to say more, but she turns away and calls out to little Natia, who is reaching out for her. A fourth planned visit doesn't happen as autumn comes early. The temperature drops dramatically and rain and sleet prevent all but the foolhardy and those forced to work from being outside. The trustees have curtailed their daily visits to Silka, perhaps thinking she has received the message or having found someone else to intimidate. Still, the drugs dwindle and the doctor seems permanently rattled. A feeling of unease plagues Silka, darkness and cold closing in on her with the weather. Chapter 19. Daily life for Silka plays out, the only thing changing being the patients in the beds. The gloom of another winter 50 miles from the Arctic Circle hits and settles on her. Getting out of bed in the darkness is something she doesn't want to do. Often she doesn't go to the mess hall for breakfast. Her conversations in the evening have ceased. No longer does she gather around the stove, sipping hot tea and listening to the stories and complaints of the women, who now all trudge to different parts of the camp for work, with varying degrees of warmth, food and physical challenge. More in the hut are able to aid the others now, and so the pressure is off Silka. She is no longer the only one who can bring in extra rations or materials. But being less useful is not necessarily a state Silka is able to embrace. Her bed becomes her sanctuary, and she lies with her head turned to the wall. On the ward, Raisa and Liuba notice the change, comment on it, and ask if something is wrong. Can they do anything to help her? With a forced half-smile, she tells them she is fine. Nothing is wrong. There is no other way to answer their questions. Silka cannot articulate to herself, let alone anyone else, how she is feeling. For the first time in many years, she has allowed herself to be dragged down by the enormity of what she has seen, heard, and done, or not done, herself. What she no longer has, and what she can never long for. It is like an avalanche. There seems to be no way now of holding it at bay. She doesn't understand how she kept it all back before, but suspects this may be happening because she has acknowledged aloud to Yelena that she survived that other place. Josie is also front and centre in Silka's mind. With every day that passes, Josie comes closer to being separated from her daughter. Silka thought she had been saved from this feeling of despair by using her position to make a difference to many of the sick and injured. Now she knows that it will always catch up to her. She is filled with heaviness. Why go on?
Get the midday medication, Raisa tells her one day, seeking to jolt Silka from her melancholy. Without response, Silka trudges to the dispensary, shutting the door behind her. She stares at the medications lining the shelves for a long time, disorientated. She picks up a pill bottle, the Cyrillic script swimming in her vision. To take them all would bring back the blankness. She tips the pills into her hand. She rolls them around. She tips the pills back into the bottle and, trembling, spills some on the floor. She gets down on her knees and starts to pick them up. The door opens, startling her.
Silka, I've been looking for you, Yelena says, putting her head round the door. Did you drop something?
Yes, Silka says, not looking up. I'll be out in a moment.
Once the trembling has subsided, Silka takes the medication to Raisa and then finds Yelena. The doctor looks at her steadily for a while, as if guessing what has just played out in Silka's mind. Her dance with death, oblivion, freedom from the aching loss and the guilt and shame, and then her step back from the abyss.
Are you ready for another challenge? Yelena asks Silka.
Not really, Silka replies. I think you are, Yelena says slowly, still watching her carefully. At least you could try it, and if you don't like it, well, we can always stop it.
Are you opening another ward?
No, not a ward. We need a new nurse on the ambulance. What do you say?
I've seen what the ambulance brings in. How can I help them? I need you and Raisa and Liuba to tell me what to do.
No, you don't. Not anymore, Silka. I think you would be a great asset at the scene of the accident. They need someone who can think quickly on her feet, do what needs to be done to get the patient here. Then we can take over. Will you at least give it a try?
What have I got to lose? Silka thinks.
All right, I will. Don't forget, Silka, I am here, any time you want to talk. Silka sways a little on her feet. Sometimes she does run the words in her head, but can she let them out?
I need to get back to work.
What about at the end of the day? Yelena persists. I'll make sure you get something to eat if you miss your dinner. Silka is afraid to let it come up, come out, but talking about it is something she hasn't tried. She feels a glimmer of something, that survival mechanism, a sense of hope.
Maybe she should.
She nods, just a little.
Not here. I don't want anyone we work with to see me talking to you.
I'll find an empty room for us. While they have been talking, a new patient has arrived. Blood is seeping through the bandages on his bare chest. He is groaning quietly, the deep, painful sound Silka has come to recognise as coming from someone barely conscious and unable to scream out in pain. She is glad of the distraction. Do you need a hand? She calls out to the men, roughly transferring him from the stretcher to the bed. He's not going to make it, one of them calls back. Silka walks over to the bed, picking up the man's file that has been dropped on his legs. She reads the brief notes. Multiple stab wounds to the chest and abdomen. Extreme loss of blood. No active treatment. A hand grabs at her apron. Strong and with purpose, the man pulls her towards the head of the bed, his eyes pleading, small gasps escaping from his bloodied mouth.
Help!
Barely whispered. Silka takes his hand and looks down at the wounded man. Only then does she recognise him. It's the thug who threatened her in the dispensary, shadowed her, taunted her.
You, he says.
Yes, me.
The drugs.
Silka can see his face is full of regret.
I know it's this place that did that to you, Silka says.
The man manages to nod, squeezes her hand.
Silke holds the man's hand between her own two until she feels the strength leave it. She places it on the bed and she closes his eyes. She doesn't know what he did in his life or in here, but he will not be harming anybody else now, and she thinks she can spare him a thought. A prayer. Picking up his file, she records the time of death. She takes the file back to the nurse's desk and asks Raisa if she knows what happened to the man whose death she has just recorded. He was the loser in a fight. The trustees of the criminal class are always wanting to be the top dog around here. This is the way it ends up. At the end of the day, Silke takes a cursory look around, but can't see Yelena. Gathering her coat, she walks from the ward, trying not to admit to herself that she is grateful she has escaped talking to her. As she steps into the waiting room, Yelena is there. She beckons Silke to follow her to a small room off to the side of the ward. A desk and two chairs are the only furniture in the room. Yelena places the chairs face to face. She waits for Silke to begin. Silke takes her time folding her coat and placing it just so on the floor beside her. Raising her head, she looks directly at Yelena. I was only 16 when I went into that other place, but I grew up fast. Yelena says nothing. They said they wanted people to go to work for them. Yelena nods. The Germans, the Nazis. I stood in a cattle train for days, peed where I stood, held up by people surrounding me, squashing me. And it took you to the camp called Auschwitz?
Yes,
Silke says quietly. My sister too.
How long were you there?
3 years.
But that's
a long time to be there, yes.
For 3 years I lived in hell, the abyss. Although I've been here just as long now. Tell me about the number on your arm.
That was our introduction to Auschwitz. They took my small bag of belongings, they took my clothes, they took my youth, my identity, and then they took my name and gave me a number.
How did you
survive? Silke begins shaking.
In a place that was created for one reason only, to exterminate us. I'm not sure I can tell you.
She holds her arms around herself.
Silke, it's all right. You don't have to tell me anything you don't want to.
Thank you, Yelena Georgievna, Silke says, and then forces herself to ask something.
Do you know why I'm here?
No, I don't. I don't know why anyone is here, and I have no need to ask. I'm sorry if that makes me sound like a coward.
Silke clears her throat.
I am here because I slept with the enemy, or that is what I was charged with. Sleeping with the enemy, working with the enemy. For me, there was no sleeping. They came into my bed and sometimes slept after they
raped you.
Is it rape if you don't fight back? Don't say no.
Did you want them to have sex with you?
No, of course not.
Then it is rape. I take it these men had some kind of power or control over you.
Silke laughs. Standing up, she walks around the room.
They were senior officers.
Oh, I see. This was in Auschwitz.
Yes and no. It was another camp down the road from Auschwitz, but still part of it. It was called Birkenau.
And for 3 years.
2.5.
Yes.
And I never said no. Never fought back.
How could you fight a man? I'm sure they were bigger than you.
That's an understatement. One of them, I didn't even come up to his chin, and there was...
Was what?
The gas chambers where everyone went.
Went in alive and came out the chimney. I saw them every day. Every day, that was my future if I didn't.
So you're telling me you spent 2.5 years being raped by the men in charge of the camp in which you were a prisoner, and for that you are now here?
Silke sits back down on the chair.
Leaning forward, she stares Yelena in the eyes.
I gave in.
Yelena shakes her head. There is more, Silke thinks. Can she say it? Tell her all of it. Telling her this much has already exhausted her. Yelena reaches out and takes Silke's hands.
The first day I saw you, I felt there was something about you. A strength, a sense of self-knowledge that I rarely see. And now, with the little you've told me, I don't know what to say, other than that you are very brave. There is nothing I can do to get you out of here, but I can look out for you as best I can and try to keep you safe. You have shown what a fighter you are. My God, how have you done it?
I just want to live. I need to feel the pain I wake up with every morning, knowing I am alive, and my family aren't. This pain is my punishment for surviving, and I need to feel it. Live it.
Silke, I don't know what to say to you, other than keep living. Wake up each morning and breathe. You make a huge difference here, and if you go with the ambulance, you will be helping keep patients alive. I truly believe you will thrive in this role.
All right, I'll do it. I can be brave because of you. You're the most courageous of us all. I haven't said that before, but that is how I feel about you. So brave, being here when you don't have to be.
You don't have to say that. Yes, I choose to be here. I am a physician. I always wanted to help people. And here, well, here, there are a lot of people who need the help I can provide. But we're not here to talk about me.
Silke smiles at Yelena.
Well, I really appreciate this. Yelena Georgievna, thank you.
Silke stands, thinking of the solace of her bed, of lying facing the wall. Yelena stands too, and Silke looks at her, grateful to see no pity on her face.
See you tomorrow then, Silke.
See you tomorrow.
As she steps outside, she glances over towards the administration building. And today, he is there. Alexander, standing under a searchlight in the snow, raising his cigarette to his lips, closing his eyes, shifting his shoulders up and down for warmth. She holds the bright image in her mind as she walks away.